Hi, welcome to another of our Coffee Time Chats. Today we're joined by Glenn Coben and Jacqueline Villamil of Strategic Solution Partners. In this discussion, Glenn and Jacqueline talk about a project Glenn and his team were involved with, developing an innovative F&B model that provides a safe environment, multi-dining options, increased guest experience, improved value proposition, and impacts the overall revenue generation and cost control. Really hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started. Hi, welcome to both of you. Thanks for joining us, Jacqueline and Glenn. Great to have you joining us here on one of our coffee time chats. And we're going to be using a case study that you guys have been involved with to kind of look into how F&B coming out of the pandemic situation can be used as an advantage with a bit of an innovative thought. Before we get into that detail in more discussion, let me get each of you to introduce yourselves so that at least our viewers and listeners know who you are. So Jacqueline, if I can kick off with you, please.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jacqueline Villamil. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Strategic Solution Partners.
Super. And Glenn, over to you.
Glenn Coben, founder of Glenn and Company. We are an architecture and design firm, and we are one of the P's in the Strategic Solution Partners collective.
Super. Thank you very much. So as I mentioned, we're going to be using a case study. So Glenn, this is kind of your baby, if I can kind of put you in the front seat here. So first of all, who's the hotel?
So we were approached to work at a Cherokee Nation entertainment hotel and casino in a small town in the northwestern portion of Oklahoma. Why I know northwestern Oklahoma is because I fly into northwestern Arkansas to get there. So I'm a little geographically challenged. So it's in Oklahoma. The Cherokee charter was such that they could build hotels and casinos in Oklahoma. This is a small hotel and casino. It has, I think, 140 keys in the hotel. And it's a lovely sort of, I would call it a regional hotel and casino. Probably if anybody's listening, it's located within about 45 minutes of Bentonville, Arkansas, which is the headquarters of Walmart. Okay. And they approached us with the idea. They had the idea to say, hey, the pandemic has closed down our buffet, a very, very successful buffet within the hotel. And they wanted to try to convert the buffet into a food hall where they would create seven unique food stations, or we call them kiosks, not food stations. And they're essentially distinct little buildings or footprints that food will be created for each of those concepts within that kiosk itself.
What was their setup previously? Just to kind of put this in context of where you took it.
Yes. So the buffet had a supporting kitchen, a massive supporting kitchen that then servers would take the food and fill up the buffet, the sort of chafing dishes, I guess is the simplest way to put it, all under kind of heat lamps. And there were some of these chafing dishes were heated and some were not. The really neat thing about the whole setup of the food hall is that we were able to reuse the entire kitchen that supported the previous buffet. So food could be prepped, food could be cooked, and then brought out to each of the specific kitchens or kiosks, where then each dish would be created a la minute in front of the guest. So right. You're not seeing... The thing about this is the guest, I believe, and this is what the Cherokee folks wanted to make sure was happening, is that the food was not being created somewhere else and packaged up somewhere else, that it was all being done in front of the guests. So the guests could see from the moment a piece of protein was taken out of a refrigerator or refrigerated drawer and put onto a flat top or a skillet to the time it was put into a package. That, to me, being a New Yorker and, you know, going into a bunch of you know, where do I go for lunch today? Because everything's closed. You know, you kind of want to see that action or that activity just, I guess, in a sense, safety precautions prevail.
Well, I was going to pick up on that from the safety point of view is obviously, you know, one factor there. And Jacqueline, maybe you want to join in terms of what you see across some of your clients. If I kind of just broaden this out a little bit from beyond just this one hotel. But if we take the pandemic, the first issue people were instantly thinking about was safety. But I guess we also then had a massive loss of revenue. There is also a chance then to consider, is this an opportunity to maybe reinvigorate? And I guess we also had then a challenge around staffing. So can you two just maybe talk more broadly about what some of these issues, how some of those issues have manifested themselves either in this property that they were foreseeing? You know, we might need to adjust to this. And what are you seeing just more broadly in the hotel sector in terms of F&B challenges?
Food and beverage was the place where hotels or the community or the world was the most concerned about in hotels, right? Because of closeness, because of interaction, because of touching, because of food, so on and so forth. So hotels and restaurants were challenged in how do we keep running our business under all the restrictions of safety that we have, right? Distance between people, distance between tables, you know, buffets were no longer acceptable because you were constantly touching utensils and so forth. So how do you take all the restrictions and reinvent what you can offer? And for the longest time, everybody was frozen because we did not know what to do, right? So months went by and maybe some hotels were open, but they didn't have any food and beverage offering. And then there was very limited offerings from restaurants. It was only takeout and so forth. So I think that this is where I want to segue a little bit into what Glenn has done at this particular project, because they studied the layout. Well, first of all, not doing buffets was the first thing, right? But still creating a food and beverage offering that was interesting enough for the guests. And it was a great revenue generator. It was a great enhancement to the revenue experience, which, as we know, impacts revenue, impacts reviews, impacts average rate. Yeah. I mean, it's a domino effect. So what Glenn and his team did is they took this space and they designed it. I mean, Glenn, you can speak to, you know, how they analyzed the flow of how the restaurant would go and where they strategically placed certain things in order for people not to be standing, you know, close together. Or so, Glenn, do you want to go into that? Because I think that that's brilliant. Sure. How you took all those elements and you put them into the design that would help the hotel casino, you know, bring back the food and beverage offering, bring back the guests and everything that I already talked about.
No, that's fantastic. Thank you. And maybe a side gig on marketing us. It's hard for me to be brief when I talk about these things, but I'll try and distill it down to the essence. Food halls come in many different shapes and sizes. But if you think about the way they're operated, there are two essential ways of doing it. One is where there are individual kiosks that are being operated by individual businesses or individual chefs. And I'm not going to even attempt to equate it to Harrods. But the idea is that those are what we see in a majority of places around the United States, where a developer has a large piece of a large space, and the default is, oh, food hall. We can just build it out and lease out 12 or 15 different spaces to different operators, and they're going to test it out. There'll be short-term leases. The other kind of food hall, which is really interesting, and it's applicable to the Cherokee Nation project, is that it's a single operator. So how do you create a series of identifiably unique offerings that in some cases are actually connected to one another? You can't see me waving my arms around, but if two kiosks, a Mexican one and a sandwich kiosk, and let's say another, a barbecue one, are kind of connected behind the scenes,
yeah,
instead of it, but making it look like they're completely unique and different kiosks from the guest side. Now, what I've done is I've said, okay, the sandwich place might not be that busy, but the barbecue is just slamming. I could take the two people that are scheduled to be at the sandwich place and slide one over. If they were disconnected from a back of house standpoint from one another, those two people were at the sandwich place would have to abandon ship essentially. And when someone came over to the counter, you have to scramble. But if they're all connected, that was the great thing that we were able to do. The reason we did it this way is that we needed to also connect back to the existing kitchen. So it's not rocket science. It's working from a flow standpoint. As Jacqueline said, we looked at the flow from the front of house, but more important was actually looking at the flow from the back of house and how to support each of these individual kiosks, even though they're not entirely individual from one another because they're connected behind the scenes. And it hasn't opened yet. There's no proof of concept in this location, but it's working. We did the same type of layout for a food hall at Columbia University, which opened about 6 months ago for a chef named Franklin Becker. This is called Manhattanville Market. And I don't want to pivot away because I know we're talking hotels and how to increase revenue, but the test there is that four of the food concepts share one continuous counter, and you can go up to any one of those four, but the chefs that are working to support those four concepts are actually sharing the responsibilities of cooking, whether it's hummus, pizza, salad, or the chicken and biscuit concept. So
how does that work from a guest experience point of view?
Oh, it's signage, and it's branding it from the outside so that they feel like when I walk into the space, I see the sign for Butterfunk biscuit, and I'm like, even though there's a salad place in front of me, I'm gonna go to the Butterfunk biscuit place. And it's just through signage, through wayfinding, that the personality of those kiosks actually come out. But again, we are geeks about process, and I think that that's an important thing. I'm not here to market the SSP folks, but we are process driven to find solutions. And in this case, the architecture side of it, the design stuff is what I love doing. But the geeky part of figuring out the back of house, like you can go into a place and realize pretty quickly that it wasn't designed well from a service standpoint. You can't really tell. Right. You can't really tell like, oh, it's red, it's green, it's purple, it's pink. That doesn't have anything to do with the flow or the way it operates. And we spend a lot of time.
Sorry, go.
No, we spend a lot of time trying to figure out the flow to make it more efficient from an operation standpoint. We also have to figure out certainly, you know, how the guest navigates their way through here. And
Well, they were the two things that was striking me as I'm listening to it, because you've got, I mean, it's not just about generating revenue. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, you've got to put expense in to make these changes, but you know, coming out after the 2 years of the pandemic, cash is still tight, and there's been a greater increase on profitability, and with restricted on the human resource. I mean, listening to your example there, the ability to flex the staff to where demand is, the efficiencies around the operation and utilizing one kitchen, that was one side that struck me. But the other side also to me seemed that, yes, okay, the signage from the guest experience to help delineate between them. But if you're focusing on a more efficient and more effective and a better product and a better service, then the guest experience, I would imagine, is enhanced. What were your thoughts on that, Jacqueline?
Well, I think that this hotel was very bright in taking, I think it was 10,000 square feet of space and repurposing it, right? Because it was sitting empty and they couldn't use it. So, and without, like I said earlier, without a food and beverage offering, hotels have been kind of limited. Their reviews have, plummeted. Their occupancies in some cases have been impacted. But so by reimagining their food and beverage offering, they're giving the guest a much better experience. And, you know, there's a lot of people that travel nowadays, they choose hotels depending on the food as well. You know, food reviews, I know that I'm one of them, right? So when you're looking for hotels, you're also looking at reviews and, hey, how is the food and beverage offering? So if you have a choice between one or the other and one has better food reviews, you're going to go to that one. So what I think that Glenn and his team through this project, what they're doing is impacting it, the guest experience, and you know, potentially not only drawing from the guests that are coming into the hotel, but also the local community. So I think that that's the secret for a food and beverage or a restaurant, or in this case, this food hall, is when you're looking at how you capture your revenue, is not just ideally, is not just from your guests, but it's also from the local community, because they're the ones who can keep you going, right? They're the ones that give you that base business, if you want to call it.
Well, we started to open up and international travel wasn't there, we were relying a lot on the local community, weren't we? Glenn, you were going to say something, sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say, you know, when I said where it's located in proximity to Bentonville, when we were doing the initial kickoff meeting out in West Siloam Springs, the marketing department before the people who went to the buffet were essentially locals. So this gave them an opportunity to elevate, not alienate the core customer who was coming here, but recognize that if they elevated some of the offerings, they might be able to extend or expand out the area of influence to attract some of the people who were living in Bentonville and the surrounding area. So that was pretty neat, because I went to a few tastings and it certainly wasn't, I'm not going to denigrate buffet food, but it wasn't buffet food. It wasn't what we would normally, you know, recognize as the stuff that comes out of those dishes. It was well thought out, really flavorful combinations of food. And that was the neat thing, as they were trying different concepts, was how do you not replicate the offerings of the buffet, but recognize that there is someone who's going to want barbecue, but there's, you know, which kind of barbecue is it going to be? Which is a whole other episode, right? Yeah. You know, talking about barbecue. You know, and they took a deep dive into the whole food and beverage, the potential of food and beverage and how that can drive business from outside of just the people who are coming to the casino to gamble or people who are staying at the hotel.
So because I guess we've all heard about hotels that, you know, there is an increase of demand coming through, but it is still below where they are used to it, you know, the levels they're used to. So in a way, you're having to compete even harder for a lower level of demand that existed before. So I guess in a way, trying to, as people come out and start travel again, whether locally, regionally, and they're looking for an experience because we've all been restricted in what we can do for a while, then to have a new experience, I would guess also enables them to position themselves in a more competitively in that market. Would that be fair?
I mean, absolutely. You know, how do you be innovative? How can you be innovative to get the people to come back? How do you get them to stay? You know, that's that. Even pre-pandemic, you know, we were doing hotels with restaurants in them, and you know, look, I'm a New Yorker. If I eat at a hotel, an urban hotel that I've gone to, Jacqueline, if you were sitting next to me, you might kick me at this point, but I'm not going to eat at the hotel restaurant. I'm going to go and explore the city. You know, when I go to a place that I don't know, or it's a resort, or I'm there on business. I mean, I was just at down at Turnberry for a conference, and we ate in the hotel and it was lovely. Yes, we need to be aware of how to keep people on property a little bit longer. That's the age old challenge that we have in designing food and beverage places for within these locations.
Yeah.
I think that that's a secret, something that Glenn just said. You know, I wouldn't eat at the hotel restaurant, but I think that that's what hotels are. You know, this trend started before pandemic, but how do hotels reinvent their food and beverage offering, their restaurants, their bars, to make sure that they do capture at least, you know, if you have an average length of stay of 2.5 nights, how do you capture at least one night of dinner of that guest? So I think that the creativity and the innovation that we're seeing after pandemic is probably pretty much, you know, a good thing needed to reinvigorate. Again, the guest experience is not just rooms revenue. Is there's other revenue. There's other ways of impacting the guest experience, which will bring them back, which will give you the reviews, which will give you the average rate, which, you know, again, like I said before, it's that domino effect.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, listen, if I'm staying in a hotel and the ones that have gotten me to go to their F&B locations have left something in the room that represents what they're doing there. You know, and I think that that's one of the things we've talked about at West Siloam is there a little taste that you can provide the guests that doesn't ruin, you know, doesn't fall apart by sitting in a room for an hour, whether it's a little piece of dessert, a little sweet, or a coupon that says, hey, come and try a cocktail at our brand new food hall. So we see innovation is what is required, but it's not that it's not the secret sauce, right? It's just being smart about how you're treating the guest. And I think that's one of the things, Trevor, you said earlier, you know, the guests are looking for a hug. This is very reminiscent of, you know, in New York City after 9/11, restaurants were struggling to open up. And before that happened, we saw big grand restaurants, you know, massive restaurants, very opulent. And then the shift became where there were smaller restaurants where they were community-based, and it gave restaurateurs and chefs an opportunity to actually hug their guests. That's literally what people wanted when they were going into these restaurants or going into hotels. And I think, I don't know where we're going industry-wise, but the idea that when people are ready for a hug, these places should be ready to give that to their guests.
Well, it was funny. You kind of led me into a question that I wanted to ask. I was going to say, so where is it going? You've just said you don't know, so this could be a short answer. But that was kind of, there was a part of me that was thinking, you know, as we're looking at this, as hotels are under pressure from Airbnb and people want to embed themselves in the local community, we're talking about the digital nomads and the working out of the hybrid working and remote working. We're looking, as you say, of creating an authentic experience, giving somebody a hug, making them, I mean, to me, it's just making them feel welcome rather than just how much can we squeeze out of your wallet to add to our additional ancillary revenue? You know, how can we actually make you feel as if we want you to come stay with us, but staying doesn't necessarily anymore just mean you've got to book a room. You know, you can come and stay with us for an hour and have something to eat or drink. You can come and stay with us for a couple of hours and meet in our lobby. What, how do you see some of these trends that were there before pandemic, but have maybe been accelerated or made people look a little bit more closely at it? Just a little bit of future gazing. How do you think that might have an impact around how hotels are looking at their F&B offering all the way from the lobby right through? And both of you can chip in here with whatever thoughts, ideas you have.
Well, it's a great topic, and it's a great starter of a conversation, which is probably a lot longer than we have. But you know, we spoke earlier about the pre-pandemic, and this is pre-pandemic hotel like the Ace Hotel in New York City on Broadway and 29th Street, which created public spaces that were essentially community living rooms. And that brings to mind a hotel that we're doing right now out on Shelter Island, which is between the North Fork and the South Fork, the Swanky or South Fork. And it's a hotel that's been around for 150 years through different iterations, whether it was a boarding house or an inn. And our client bought it, and we've been working on a two-year renovation of it. And what's striking to me is that it's about 33 keys across the entire property, made up of three separate buildings. But there was a main building that had a tavern, and we're actually adding a sushi bar and a noodle bar and a little coffee shop, things that this inn never had. And what's interesting is that all this food and beverage that we're creating is not for the guests of the hotel. I mean, it is in a sense, but the reality is that this is the previous owners of this hotel didn't allow people to come to the hotel to hang out. And there's a lovely porch and there's an outdoor terrace, which have beautiful views of the Sound. But they kind of made it inward facing, and it was for the guest, and it was exclusive. What the new owner, our client, is really engaged with the community and wants the community to use this space as a living room, as a porch, as a place to gather. Not too late, you know, because we don't want to affect the residents within the neighborhood. But this is the ultimate in terms of creating a food and beverage concept that is really community based, local based, supporting the local place and the local people. And I think that if we pay attention to it, that many of these hotels, and therefore the food and beverage, if designed, you know, New York City hotels, the flaw with the design is a real estate problem. The restaurant is always behind the elevators. You never see the restaurant when you walk into a mid-block hotel. And that is not quite the kiss of death, but it's really hard to operate a restaurant when you can't see people in the restaurant. There's no vibrancy. Yeah. And I think that's the lesson that we're learning here, is that people want to be seen. They want to see what's going on. And that was the lesson of the ACE. And that's where I believe we were going before the pandemic. This is going to just help us understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jacqueline?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to think about what are some of the lessons that pandemic left us with, right? I mean, we're seeing this massive wave of people quitting their jobs, you know, looking for quality of life. And that translates to everything, I believe, into, you know, also the food and beverage offerings. So I think that anything that has to do with health and wellness, with connection, with, you know, experience, people are a lot more, I believe, that what we're seeing, that we will continue to see, is people are Glenn used the word grandeur before, you know, like noisy, and we're going more for quality, for probably more boutique-ish, more experience-driven, mm-hmm. you know, with an element of, like I said, health, wellness, connection.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm seeing.
No, that makes sense. And I think your point as well, Glenn, about not seeing it. It's funny, you know, just on a very basic level, when we're walking down a high street and we're looking at restaurants, you know, you get drawn to the restaurant that looks busy, because if it doesn't look busy, you're thinking, well, what's the problem there? So if A, you're not aware of the restaurant, or B, you can't see what it's like, are you really going to walk through the hotel to go and look through the door of the restaurant to see if it's busy or not? You kind of need that impact straight out the gate, don't you?
Right.
Yeah, but I also think that people get drawn by design and by what looks pretty. So I think it's a combination, and that's where I believe that, you know, the design that Glenn and his team work on is so brilliant, because they're not only focused on making something look beautiful and enticing, but they're sort of like the whole package, right? They're beautiful design, but also how do we bring people in? How do we invite people in? And how do we work with a team at the hotel or at the restaurant for an efficient operation? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really good, well-rounded package.
That makes sense.
Well, thank you. That's amazingly well said. So I appreciate that.
Look, I'm conscious of both your ties, so we're going to kind of wrap up this conversation. But just one final question specifically for you, Glenn. Typically, If you take this project in Cherokee, how long? Because I'd love to come back and revisit. And I think the fact that you've mentioned two, one that you're working on, both of these that you're working on at the moment, the property that's been around for 130 years and then the casino property, both different challenges. It would be great to kind of come back and revisit and look at those projects that you've worked on and what are some of the outcomes that they see. Typically, how long does it take for this to embed and then for the property to actually start to see not a return on investment, but a shift in behavior or an impact of the new design, the new concept?
I would say the casino project is probably a year of operations to see how it's going, go through the full cycle. Yeah. Once all seven of the kiosks are up and running, I would look at a year out to understand that. And then because you'll go through the slow times and you'll go through the super busy times, you know, New Year's Eve is probably the craziest time.
Yeah. You need to get the up and flow.
Right. For the hotel on Shelter Island, I would imagine we'll know pretty well by the end of the summer if this has met its mission in terms of allowing reacquainting the local community with the property. There's certainly a lot of interest in it. It's very prominent in terms of where it's located on the island. And the owner has been very clear that she wants this to be once again a central element to the community's experience on the island. So, and that is reopening. I think we're cutting the ribbon on April 30th of this year. So hopefully it'll be done by then. But all things look good at this point to being able to open a significant portion of it by certainly by Memorial Day of this year.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a good excuse to reconnect with you later in the future and hear how these things, because then we can really see how the impact is leading through into the top line revenue, but also bottom line profitability as well. So that would be great. Any final thoughts or comments from you guys before we wrap up?
No. I think for me, hoteliers, restaurateurs, be creative, think out of the box. You know, what we used to do probably doesn't work anymore, but there are other innovative ways that we can generate an amazing guest experience, drive revenue, drive profitability. So think out of the box. I think that's my parting
parting thoughts. Absolutely. Well, that's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much for finding the time. Thank you so much for sharing a real life example that is going on and the thought process behind it and what they're trying to adjust the challenges, and look forward to hearing. And obviously don't need to keep our fingers crossed. Of course it's going to work successfully.
Of course it will.
I mean, we've got Glenn on the case. How could it not?
Exactly.
But it'd be good to touch base and hear how it works.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Trevor. Really appreciate
your time.
Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Glenn and Jacqueline for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. We value your input and we're happy to follow up with our guests. Also, if there are any topics that particularly interest you, or if there are any specific guests you would like to hear from, please do let us know. You can reach us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. That's insights@revenue-hub.com. If you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. If you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. And if you do watch it on YouTube, it would be great if you could give it a thumbs up or even subscribe, as it really helps out the channel. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.